Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Time and Room Podcast. Again, the most glorious lacrosse podcast in all the land. All about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, you know now, he played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there, blah, blah, blah. He's currently the head coach at St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac. Hey, Coach, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I'm fired up. I feel ready to go. And you straight off the lacrosse field earlier today, so it's a good day, man. You caught me on a good day.
Right. Sure. There's something special about it. I know that the club practices have been ramping up, and tournaments are around the corner. And what's it like just to have, like, you know, like they're opening things up, you can have some contact, and it's like, it feels like the real world again, right?
Yeah, it feels a little bit normal. I know you, it was a couple episodes, you didn't want, but you refused to be in the new normal.
Yeah, I'm not doing new normal.
You want to get back to the old normal. So,
right.
You know, it does feel a little like the old normal, except, you know, I miss the little things like bringing the team in for a huddle and, you know, breaking it down.
So how do you do that? How do you hold a huddle?
Oh, don't even ask.
Is it a nightmare?
It's just put our sticks up in the air and just say,
well, how do you address the team?
You know, we bring them in and
what the hell's going to happen in the tournament on a sideline in a timeout?
I mean, look, the more serious things get, probably likely it's going to go away. And, you know,
it's going to be old school.
If you're at a tournament, you're probably saying, look, I'm okay with the risks that I'm taking at this moment. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I guess that's what you have to, you know, kind of be comfortable with, or you don't go to tournament, right? I mean, I think club directors, coaches are doing a great job. I mean, you have to, I mean, from a liability standpoint, toe the line of saying, look, like if you don't feel comfortable, don't come, mm-hmm. you know, like no one's making you do this. And the kids love it. Obviously the kids want to be there. Most of them do. But you don't know anyone's family's health situation. So yeah, I miss those little things, but, you know, just preparing, you know, today we did a little bit of a training session that I was a little bit more in control of. And so to be able to, you know, practice plan and dictate, and you got to be pretty creative with how you plan and things like that, just with trying to make sure that you do things the right way, especially early on. But
well, the good thing is,
it's awesome, man.
A good thing is, like, let's just talk this through here for a moment here, Coach. So with like a club team, you got maybe 20, 22 guys, I don't know, 23 guys maybe. It's not like you got 50, yeah. right? It's not like D1 lacrosse. So, I mean, can you be creative when you're having a huddle and have like guys in a circle, you know, maybe instead of having, you know what I mean, 20 guys all clumped together? Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think this out.
No, you definitely can. I mean, I think one immediate obvious thing that I think we'll do, and it's just like by position, right? Like you can address things, mm-hmm. You know, go defensively. Let's bring the poles in. I mean, that's right. When we had a scrimmage on Saturday with my club team. We kind of did that. And so it ends up being like 8 or 9 guys in each group. And so it's all about like limiting those big groups and those points of contact. But there's some things you need to address with the team, whether it's, you know, in a club tournament, you're down 4-1 and you're getting your ass kicked, your butt kicked or whatever, because you're not giving great effort, or you didn't wake up, you didn't come out in the first quarter. Like you got to light a
fire.
Talk
to the team. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. So you do it behind a mask, I guess.
Are coaches wearing masks?
They are when they're, when, you know, you can't see me, but when I'm this close to you as my microphone, yeah, they are. I mean, I think they are, because just even that, for the sheer optics of it, it doesn't look good if you don't have one on and you're like right in someone's face, even if you're just having a conversation. So I tend to just back up and take my mask off because, like, I feel less comfortable and less.
I don't know how you could coach with a mask on.
I know. I don't know if this kid's taking me serious right now. Like, you know what I mean? So, even with parents, you know, that, you know, talking today, like, I just, like, I want to talk to you guys. I'm going to step backwards so I can take my mask off. Right. You know, because I.
And are they okay? They're cool with that? They understand?
Yeah, I think they didn't punch me or anything, but, yeah. You know, who knows?
So
I
mean, weird.
I
don't know.
Yeah,
it's just such a weird time. We gotta get
new
this.
Normal, man.
There's no new normal. I refuse to accept that. This is a temporary, like, craziness. This cannot be.
I know,
normal.
But it's so much more permanent than I thought it would be.
No, it's certainly lasting a lot longer.
I didn't think, like, you know, and I think I never thought in July I would be thinking about next spring season and what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, and even like I'm. Scheduling games, and I'm like, well, I don't even know if we'll be playing lacrosse at that point. And part of that is, it's not because we won't have a season. We'll have a season. We're going to be competing for a championship. It's more because we don't know what's going to happen in the fall and the trickle down effect, that how that could push back all these other sports. There's all these crazy ideas being thrown out there. So
yeah, you want to talk about the crazy idea that's being thrown out there in our conference, in the MAC?
Well, it's not just the MAC.
I'm talking about in high school.
It's high. Yeah, it's not just MAC. I mean, I've heard a full gamut of different things. This all Adam Bradley, who runs Lead 'Em Up, tweeted something the other day about, you know, what he heard from a football coach who, you know, was maybe a public or a private school football coach. But so it's not just the MAC. It's I've even heard it on like a national scale. So everyone can kind of do the same thing. But talking about having like not starting sports until either January or December, and then doing like a winter sports in the winter, fall sports in early spring / late winter, February, March, and then spring sports in the last, you know, part of the school year. But it ends up being abbreviated seasons for all three seasons. And I got to tell you, Eric, I just
breaks your heart, right?
It breaks my heart, but honestly, it pisses me off.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know how hard our kids work, and we didn't have a season this year.
Yeah.
And everyone just said, you know what? Sorry, it's canceled. And we couldn't do anything. You know, seniors crying, I'm crying. And then now they're saying, all right, guys, we want to make sure. And I know it's because of football. I get it. But they're like, we want to make sure that fall, that it's equal. Everyone has it's a fair shake. Right. So now everyone's going to get to play their sport. Well, it's like, okay, lacrosse, baseball, track, they've now had a half a season in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't play this season. And now next season, you're telling us is going to be half the length of our normal season.
Right.
I mean, I don't even hear my voice. It just like doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Well,
just cancel fall sports.
Yeah.
Like just like you did with us. What's the difference?
Right. Cancel fall sports so that the spring sports can have their season that you cancel.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I know that's like that's really blunt and that sucks. And I have kids that play soccer but like we're bending over backwards to make everyone happy. But the spring sports last year was just like chalked up as done. Like never talked about. Could we do something in the summer? You know, could we do something now in July? Could we do anything? You know, it was just like, sorry guys, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard, man. God, it's so brutal.
I know no one making these decisions, and again, I don't want to sound, you know, I don't want to come off wrong. I know no one that's making these decisions is doing it, you know, from a bad place. Everyone's trying to make really hard decisions. You know, there's no right decision, and I am, of course, looking out for the best interest of my players and lacrosse coach. But I don't know. I feel like some sports can go on in the fall. You let those sports go on. Maybe you play volleyball in the winter alongside basketball or whatever. But because I really fear if you have those short windows and then something happens, there's no time to react. You know, like,
yeah,
you're pushing all the timeline back, assuming it's going to be perfect past January 1st. But what if it's not?
No, there's going to be issues. Things are going to pop up, you know. Yeah, it's brutal. And we know, look, everyone's trying to do what's best. They want what's best for the kids, that nobody wants anybody to get sick. Nobody wants any teachers to get sick, any coaches. We all understand sports are not number one. Health is number one. But by the same token, you know, life has to go on, and sports is a huge part of a lot of these kids' lives. And, yeah. You know, school's a huge part of their lives.
Yeah.
And just pulling school away has had devastating impacts. So we know everyone's trying to do it in the right way, and they're doing it well-meaning. But, man, we got to figure out a way, hopefully, to do this safely. And it, like I say, get back to normal. We need to get right. back to normal.
Yeah, I don't know. So we'll see. Hopefully I didn't sound like too hard there. I'm not trying to, like,
look, you're a guy
I don't
want
to rip
coach.
Into people that are making, you know, these decisions. It's just, and to be clear, none of these decisions have been made. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, fall sports. The problem too is that with schools coming back, everyone's on different pages, and St. Andrews or whoever could say they come back on time. Well, what happens if four other teams in our conference don't, or what happens if, you know, and so then it's hard to schedule around that. And so everyone's kind of on their own, but in the same sense, trying to make a unified decision. So it's definitely not easy. I don't envy anyone that's in it. But like I told the guys I was with today, when you give me a chance to coach, I'm going to go coach, and I'm going to push, and I had music going today. Like I want to enjoy it, because I feel like it can be taken away from us again at any moment.
Right.
So like for me, it's given me a new perspective a little bit. Like I've always been a little bit more old school. Like practice should be toughest. And I do believe it should be really tough, but you know, it just sucked not having our sport. You know what I mean?
Got to enjoy it a little bit too.
I want to enjoy it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I really do. And so, but if we start losing, then the music's going off. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. So today was a big day. My son, for those that follow along, he had his surgery on his shoulder, his left shoulder. Got to thank Dr. Ken Fine. You know, it was funny. A lot of people had texted me, "How'd it go? How'd it go?" Well, I've never heard a doctor say, "Well, that went terrible." You know,
right?
You know, so they said it went great. So
You
know, you don't really know. I know these,
but he's doing all right.
He's doing all right. It's just I've had this surgery, and anybody that's ever had any surgery, he's had an ACL before. Anybody that's ever had surgery knows that those first couple of days are kind of tough. And so I kind of I'm nervous about tonight and tomorrow night, just kind of dealing with the pain. He'll be fine. He's a tough kid, but you don't like to see your kids, you know, in pain. And there's only so much, you know, pain medicine I'm willing to give him, or he even wants to take.
Right.
So,
well, sometimes that stuff makes you feel worse than, you know, you can. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to eat. You got to keep your stomach up. And there's a lot to do there. So the next 24 hours, 36 hours will be interesting. But it is cool, too, that, you know, I know that, you know, gives my son a focus. You know, he even said to me, he said, I'm looking forward to this. He kind of likes rehab, and he likes working
right.
hard. Gets him on a schedule. That's one thing these kids haven't had for 4 months. He hasn't had a schedule.
Yeah.
He's had no routine.
And Steven needs that.
He needs a schedule, and he likes it. Push him. But if if there's nothing on the calendar, he's going to sit over there and play video games and hang out with his friends all day, which is great. I did the same thing. But you can only do that for so long.
Well, and those guys too. I mean, I know, you know, shout out to, you know, Lothar and those guys. Well, I'm sure they will not only rehab his shoulder, but then probably develop everything else while he's there. You know what I mean?
Well, you talked about it. I mean, when he came back from his ACL, he came back literally a better athlete and bigger, stronger, faster. And
yeah, I mean, he was like box jumping off like one leg. You know what I mean? Like things he could never do, you know, pre-ACL. So
you put the work in. You put the work in, you'll get the results.
Yeah. So awesome. We obviously send him our best. I don't hear him screaming in pain right now. So
no, he's fine. He's hanging in there.
So hopefully he's doing all right. So and I'll get him on the field coaching. You know, I know he's going to be in a sling, but we'll
he's
get him
be
out
in a
there.
Sling, but yeah, get him out there. He can help the young kids for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. He does a great job. He does a great job with our guys. So.
Well, we have an awesome guest that we're going to bring in here for a second. I don't want to give him the full breakdown yet, but we're joined by another incredible lacrosse player, one of the best face-off specialists in the world. His story is unbelievable. He's a high school football guy who played lacrosse kind of for fun and ends up playing professionally now in the PLL, and that is PLL Chrome MVP finalist Connor Farrell. We have him next. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest today, one of the breakout stars of the PLL's inaugural 2019 season. He finished with the second highest faceoff percentage. He was also awarded the league's Dave Huntley Sportsmanship Award and was nominated for Rookie of the Year and was finalist for the PLL MVP Award. He's from Holtsville, New York, where he attended Sachem East High School. Is that correct? Did I say it?
Yes, sir.
While playing at Long Island University, he was named two-time All-ECC first team. He also played football there. He was selected 22nd overall by the Chrome in the 2019 PLL College Draft. One of the great stories in the league. It's our pleasure to welcome face-off stud Connor Farrell. Connor, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So they were breaking my balls. It's Sachem East. Is that correct?
Yep, Sachem East.
Yeah, I said sack him like the first time.
Those Long Island guys will get you, man. You don't want to mess up.
Hey,
oh, yeah.
I went to kind of a legendary high school, too, DeMatha Catholic High School, and if somebody mispronounced DeMatha, I'd be pissed. So, yeah, I want to make sure I say that right. Sachem East High School. Yeah, there you go. Hey, man, thank you so much for joining us, man. It's a real pleasure to have you. And you really do, Dane and I were talking about it before we had you on, you really do have one of the great stories. Man, just talk about sort of getting started in lacrosse and football, and, you know, we'll get to the whole college bit, but what did you play first?
So, first, I'm a huge football guy, so I started playing football first, and my football coach at the time, Tom Behrens, he handed me lacrosse because he said I was able to hit people with this, so the hell yeah, let's do it.
Right.
So then I started playing lacrosse in third. I played lacrosse my whole life. But football is my real love. I played football, wrestling, and lacrosse in high school. Went to college on a full ride for football because I didn't really like lacrosse that much. I wasn't really having that much fun. And then I lost a bet to my buddy PJ Usek and Frank Renfro. That's how I started playing lacrosse
right
in college. He bet me that he could last longer than 10 seconds to me in a wrestling match, or I had to go out for the lacrosse team the next week, and then I was at practice the next day.
How long did he last?
11 seconds, so 11 he's still trying seconds. To get half my paycheck.
That's awesome.
Eric, how long do you think you'd last?
A second? Half second? I don't know. I might be able to hold my ground for a second, possibly.
You're pretty nimble. You're pretty quick on your feet. You'd be all right.
So, all right, but let's talk about, what, did you play club lacrosse? Like, what was
no,
your...
No.
Really?
I would just play, like, normal, like, school lacrosse. I didn't really play anything else, but... I still haven't paid attention to lacrosse until this past year. So like I didn't know any of the big names. Like I barely knew who Paul Rabel was.
Right.
And obviously when I saw him, I was like, oh, okay, this is the guy that everyone's talking about.
Right.
But like I didn't know 95% of the people in the league when I was entering it.
I
think that's what gave me the edge.
Yeah.
Jeez, I didn't really know who you were. I just wanted to come in there, compete, and win.
Right.
So recruiting wise, like you basically had tunnel vision on football, right? I mean, you weren't trying to get recruited for lacrosse and
Like schools would come up to me and ask me to come to the school for lacrosse. I said, no, thanks. I'm playing football. I'm good.
Right.
So were you only facing off in high school or were you doing other things as a lacrosse guy?
I was doing both. And towards the end of my high school career, he just had me doing face off.
Right. So who taught you like sort of technique, you know, that sort of thing? I mean, did you take any private lessons? Did you just kind of wing it? Did you watch videos? Because that's a very technical sport. To sort of just be like, I don't really know anybody. I'm just a stud. That's unbelievable.
So in high school, I was kind of like a bully out there. A typical middle linebacker
right.
playing lacrosse, taking faceoffs. I would just push you down to the ground and try to find the ball
right.
until I got to college. Then I really started learning the technique. My first 2 years with Mike Kama, and then my following 2 years, my last two, where I really started blowing up is Tommy Kelly. I versed him. He's in the PLL now. He plays for the Chaos.
Wow.
So I was able to go against my coach twice.
Wow, that's just unbelievable to me. And then I still don't understand quite how you go from that to like being selected in the like how do you get on anybody's radar? How does that even happen?
So I was going like maybe like 60-65% my first 2 years, and then my third year I went 70% in college, and that's pretty close to the record. And then my coach said, if you really put your mind to it, you could really be really good at this and you could go play professionally. And then that following year, my senior year, I went 80. I think they had finished like 83%, broke every single college record in lacrosse. I think the closest person to that is like 74%.
Right.
So Division I, II, and III, I crushed that record by a landslide.
That's crazy. Think about it. I mean, I coach high school in this area. And, I mean, you get those kind of percentages in the high school level sometimes. So it's sometimes so frustrating. But at the college level, you're never seeing those clips where you're like every 10 face-offs, you get to see the ball twice, Eric. Think about that.
Yeah.
As a fan, it's like maddening. You're like, all right, this game is over. But
right.
PLL is a little bit different, right? Because you got the shot clock and it's going back and forth. So it's not as decisive. But that's the one thing. I mean, obviously, you know, we both, Eric and I both follow lacrosse, but you at the D2 level, not everyone knows about the top dogs in D1. And even in this area, you know, the top dogs in D3, I think get a lot of run because you have the Salisburys of the world that are a little bit more local. But D2 sometimes gets overlooked. I mean, I think past 6-7 years, it's blown up. And I know LAU now has moved into the Division 1 level. But yeah, Talk about that experience a little bit and what that – I don't know if that even created a chip on your shoulder too, because you're the only D2 guy drafted, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
From what I read.
Exactly. So it definitely had a chip on my shoulder because I was looking at the draft and I was watching it. You've seen Duke, North Carolina, all those big D1 schools getting selected. So I was like, oh, there's no way I'm going to get picked up. So, and I finally got picked up my first day of training camp. You can definitely tell the difference from a D1 guy and a D2 guy, like shooting the ball. Like D2, you have a couple of guys on the team that can really shoot it. But these guys, I was like, what the hell is this? They're shooting 105 miles an hour. I never seen that before.
Right.
But it really put a chip on my shoulder being the only D2 guy. So I had something to prove. I had to make everyone a little scared that I was here.
Right.
I was here to play.
Did you, while you were in college, I still want to get into the football a little bit. I mean, did you enjoy the football as much as you did at lacrosse, or did lacrosse really become your favorite? And, you know, did you ever think you were going to play professionally football-wise?
I'm 100% still a football guy. I absolutely love it, my first love. I definitely would have loved to play professionally, but the lacrosse pass had a little – I was a middle linebacker, so, you know, the head hits. You're just nonstop hitting linemen in the head. I think I had to give my brain a little bit of a break and take this pass from me.
Which is crazy.
Now you're just banging your head against face-off guys.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
It's not like it's a break.
Football, I was a totally different animal. I would, before games, I would take my helmet off and start headbutting the linebackers, and the helmets, I'd be gushing blood before games. Lacrosse, I'm nice and calm. I just do my job, get my ball to Justin Gutterding and get right off.
Right.
Lacrosse guys are too soft. If we see some guy bleeding from the forehead, I'm going to be like, raise my hand. I'm out. I'm not playing this game.
that's hilarious.
We got a lot of private school kids playing this sport. I don't know if you can if we can handle that type of tenacity. But that's what that's what people love about you, right? I mean, that type of like blue collar, if you will. Obviously, you know, playing in a great public school setting up in Long Island. There's not a lot of private schools, right? It's all the great public schools up there. But the fans kind of like fell in love with you. And even I have a kid on my team who. He's got long blonde locks, and I think he was growing him the same time you were. But his name is Connor, and I know he really looks up to you. And he's a face-off guy as well. But, like, you got these young kids that, you know, get to see that, which was never something that was really part of the game, that intensity and that, I don't know, man, that Thor mentality. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, on the field, I'll smack you in the mouth. But right when that whistle ends, I'm like a big teddy bear. Like, the reason why I stay after every game for at least an hour and a half, 2 hours, make sure I sign every last person's autograph. And the reason why I do that is because when I was younger, me and my brother and my father were at New York Giants training camp. We're a huge Giant fan. And we went to go get an autograph from Brandon Jacobs. And he goes, nah, I'm too tired right now. I got to go back in and got to shower. So I just told myself, whenever I grow up and get older, if I've ever become famous, I'm going to make sure I sign everyone's autograph. 5 seconds, a little picture of them, it means the world to the kids.
Right.
Yeah. That's what I really think, where I really bonded with all the fans. Plus, right. we didn't win that many games. It would put a smile on my face just to see how happy the kids were to see me.
Right.
Asking for like a sweaty sock or something.
Right.
Pretty funny.
I remember. So I took my son and his buddy to when you guys played out of Hopkins. You know, you're in Baltimore. And I remember seeing you before, I think it was before the games. You were just hanging out watching. Like, talk about what that experience is like. You know, we've talked about it with some of the other guys. I mean, you guys are rock stars, right? What's that like playing sort of Division II lacrosse? And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, oh my God, I'm playing professionally on NBC, and we're like a trap. We're like, you know, we're like the Rolling Stones, you know, in the lacrosse world, right? I mean, going from city to city, and I can only imagine what's happening on the weekends, you know, between games and that sort of thing. It just looks like so much fun.
Mm-hmm. So the big part that really happened for me was coming from a D2, you maybe get like 400 fans at most.
Yeah.
And the first game up at Gillette Stadium, I'm walking out of the tunnel. I look up and see the big football stadium.
Right.
I was like, wow, this is it. This, playing on NBC today, first game of the year. This is legit. I cannot wait.
Right.
Like, just the people coming up, they're screaming your name and stuff. It's really freaking cool.
Yeah. Did you know when you had your first training camp and you guys did all that at IMG? Like, how quickly did you realize, wow, this is the real deal? Now, you also got drafted by the MLL too, correct? Did you work out with them at all or no?
No, no. I saw that the best guys in the world are playing for the PLL, and that's where I want to be. Right. I'd rather play with the best guys than give myself a little competition.
Right, right. That's hilarious.
He just said that so humbly. I didn't know you could be humble and say that, but you definitely can be. So, such a nice guy. No, I'd rather kick everyone else's asses in the PLL than go to the MLL.
So, when you were there at IMG, like or your first day, like did you have relationships already, like with Grunlian, with Baptiste, with those guys? You know, that's a pretty tight circle. It seems like from afar, like these guys are all pretty tight. They all support each other pretty well. I'm sure there are rivalries. I can only imagine the trash that you guys are talking to each other. But did they accept you? Did you know them while you were working in college? Had you built some relationship with some of these guys? Talk about that.
Yeah, so I really didn't know who they were before this all happened, but Greg welcomed me with open arms, and he's an absolutely great dude. I love him. He's a great father to his kid.
Right.
But you definitely have your battles. These face-off guys, it's like a wrestling match. You're nonstop just going after each other, banging heads the whole time. Your forearms are burning. But you definitely, after the game, you'd like to relax and have a nice drink with them and have a good time.
Right. But there's a camaraderie to it as well. I feel like just – you know, all the teams that I've been around of like face-off guys, like sharing tips, right? Like maybe, I don't know, in the PLL, maybe it's different because the competition and the stakes are so high, but like, I mean, you see in the offseason quarterbacks, you know, are talking about, you know, what they're seeing in defenses. And I feel like face-off guys, it's such a niche and such a, you know, lacrosse is a niche in itself and so close because of that. But then you have the face-off position, which is even more, you know, inclusive in that sense. So how does that dynamic play out in the offseason or in the film rooms? I'm sure you're working, you know, with your own face-off guys at the Chrome, but even throughout the whole PLL.
So being an ex-college football player, I'm a big film guy. So I really break down every film that I, on the guy I'm playing. So if I'm going to get someone one week, I always ask for someone's advice. Like, oh, did you see anything specific that he does differently? And I do the same for the other people. I let them know, like, oh, maybe he might throw his left hand a little too far. So if you step up a little bit, block him, you're able to get the ball right away. So we're all pretty close. We share a little advice on other guys, but game day, when we're going against each other, we don't really talk to each other during that day.
Yeah, right. I want to know, what's that like? So when you just put us inside that world, so you're getting over there and the ref's putting the ball down, and you just score a goal, you're walking towards the center there. Is there any dialogue going on? What are you looking at? What keys are you looking at? Are you looking at the way he's holding his stick? Like, what are you looking at?
So facing off, I tell everyone it's 95% mental. So you got to go walk up to that face off thinking you're the best there ever was and you're going to kick this guy's butt.
Yeah.
So what I really look for, I usually mainly focus on myself.
Yeah.
But a little thing I look for, I just look at his hands, see if they're set up differently, see if they're light, see if they're heavy. Because if they're really light, he could try to swipe the ball out from underneath your stick. So that's the only really thing I look at. Other than that, I'm focusing myself because I'm there. I want to kick this guy's butt.
When you're to a non-face-off guy, what do you mean when his hands are light? What are you saying?
So when you like kind of like football, you ever see Invincible, like Vince Papale?
Sure.
When he saw the white knuckles,
right.
That means he was coming after him.
Right.
And when they're light, he was gonna block him up. So if he's light on his hands, you won't see the white knuckles. So that maybe means he's gonna try swipe the ball from underneath you, or when he's putting a lot of pressure, that means he's gonna come after you like just strong clamp.
Right.
I'd imagine too, right? I mean, maybe it's different in the PLL because the field's a little bit different, but you're looking at your wings. I can't imagine, you know, wing play is so important at the high school, college level. You guys are so good that a lot of times the ball never gets to the wing. But the rules are a little bit different in the PLL, right? So you're not able to get the ball. I shouldn't say you not, because you are it. You can do it, but it's not as clean to get the ball in the back of your stick. So sometimes you do see some ground ball. So that wing play is huge.
Yeah.
I think you had Joel White coming off the wing last year.
Oh, yeah. Joel was unbelievable. We have the wings 1 yard closer, and that 3 foot difference is a huge piece. I had bruises all over my leg. I took so many ice baths after each game, but you slowly were able to adapt to it. It was a huge difference. Those 3 feet was a huge difference, but I had Joel White, Max Tuttle, Will Haas, and all them on my wing, so. That's pretty good wing, guys.
I remember reading, I'm just a lacrosse fan, right? So I never played. So I remember reading early on that part of the difference was too. Weren't you guys like really getting beat up? Did you adjust? Did you guys adjust the rules, or did it just? I remember early on, Greg saying, "Well, I don't know if this is going to be able to continue because the way that it was set up, you guys were really getting beat on." And I don't know if that's because the wings were closer or if there was something about the rules that allowed them to kind of pound you before the ball got loose. I don't know.
Yeah, so the first couple of weeks, all the face-off guys were just adjusting to it.
Yeah.
The wings being closer and the field 20 yards shorter.
Right.
So we really just had to adjust that. After the first couple of weeks, we really got used to it, and then we were able to roll.
Right.
The difference, the length from the midline of the box, though, is the same, right?
Yes. It's like the whole field just squeezed in about 10 yards on each side.
Right. Because now you have that one highlight play, you laying that guy out. And I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, all I saw, like, as I was like, kind of prepping for this, was like, I just saw you, like, just crush a guy. But I didn't know if it was because you tried to, like, pinch and pop and the ball's, like, rolling out. And then that guy, you know, and the box was a little bit closer. But, Eric, I don't know if you saw that play, but that was probably one of the biggest across hits I've seen.
That's insane. What?
The ball was on the ground. I just kicked the ball towards him because I saw him trying to scoop it up. So I kind of like set him up for it, and I put my shoulder right through it. I didn't teach the lacrosse guy how to hit.
There's some guys that do. I don't know if I was one of them, but
which of the guys gave you the most trouble?
I think the most trouble was probably my coach, my junior and senior year in college. Mm. He knows. He taught me pretty much everything. TK, he taught me pretty much everything I knew. So he gives me the most trouble, but I'm still able to bring it to him. It's cool.
Right.
That's got to be that's like a crazy dynamic, right? To like,
oh yeah,
you know, like a little bit of like a mentor and father-son relationship going at the face-off X. That's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, Mr. Miyagi and Danielson going at
it. Exactly. I couldn't remember the movie quote, so I didn't want to throw it out there, but that's exactly what I was thinking.
How much do you look at the like the face-off percentage? Like, is that important to you? Is that an overrated stat based on, you know, I don't know. Tell me, how important is that to you?
I don't really look at the percentages because each guy faces off differently. So, like, say I would kill one guy, he would go out and kick the other guy's butt, who would mean the other guy would be even with. So each guy faces off differently. It depends how the other guy reacts to it.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that, because obviously, you know, you, Eric and I joke about our listeners, like, you know, some people are really into lacrosse, other people are trying to learn about it, you know, they don't really know. And you're totally right. Like, as a coach, like, it's maddening. Sometimes you go out and your face-off guy dominates against a kid that's really good, and then the next week he struggles. It's a kid you don't think is that good. And you're like, why? What's the difference? Mm-hmm. So why, what are things that make those matchups so different?
Like, one thing from, I coach at LIU now too. One thing for him was that he didn't do well against someone with a certain stick. It was just something built into his head. Like, the guy used the Nike CEO, and the way that head is, it bends ridiculous. It looks like a spoon. So that just got in his head right away, and he would not do that well against him. But against a guy who would kick that guy's butt, he would go like 80% against. So facing off is all mental. I tell everyone that. It's all mental.
Right. And then at the PLL level, how much switching out was there? You know, between you and, like, the number two guy.
So most guys usually only brought one. My team, at first, we started with two guys. I was the backup at first.
Right.
And then I took over the starting spot, and they stopped dressing him because I was doing well.
Wow.
But most of the time, the only time the starter usually comes out in the league is when we go early. When you go early in the PLL, you're not allowed to take the next face off. So we have either a long pull, or like one of our D middies who just swipes the ball out, takes the next
right. Wow.
Yeah, I was looking at the rosters. I mean, there were, and again, maybe they're, and I know you guys picked up the Jacksonville faceoff kid, right? So I don't know if that's to compete at camp and then, you know, and then have a backup guy in case, God forbid, you get injured or whatever. But most teams are only, probably just because of roster size, only play one faceoff, you know, dress one faceoff guy, and then bring in a long pole to kind of muck it up if it doesn't work. So.
Exactly.
You guys are scoring so many goals. It's like, how many faceoffs are you taking a game?
I took one game. I took 20 faceoffs in a half.
Oh my God.
A facing off is exhausting. It's using every muscle in your body like a wrestler.
Right.
So that half, I came and I chugged like 3 Gatorades. It was in San Jose heat too. So I was dying out there.
And I read, did you try to, I mean, as you like kind of prep for this championship series, you try to lose some LBs to try to be able to, if you lost LBs and like you already look like the Hulk right now, I can't imagine what it was like going against you last year. But, you know, tell us about that as you're like trying to prep for what's coming this summer.
So last season I was 265 pounds.
Wow.
I was a big boy. I don't have to be that big anymore. I'm not hitting 400 pound linemen as a linebacker. stud. Right now I dropped 30, so I'm 235 right now.
Wow.
Most of that was from Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I picked that up in the off season, and I started shredding weight like crazy. That's the best cardio I've ever done. Because, you know, being a big boy, you cannot stand running. I had to find something else that I liked, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is absolutely unreal. And now I'm able to walk by someone and be like, oh, I'll kick your butt. You know, you don't stand a chance. So you're in a rear naked choke real quick.
Yeah.
Now hopefully we get one of those like sweet PLL fights that we had last year that like was all that controversy. And you just see Connor out there just like drop kick somebody.
Yeah. I won't throw a single punch. I'll just put him in an arm bar.
Wow. So how did you, with the whole COVID situation then, and then like with jiu-jitsu, I have some buddies that did do that, and the gym was like shut down for a while. Like how long were you able, you know, when were you able to go back? Did you feel uncomfortable about that? And then I want to talk to you about sort of prepping for this, because as we have all these, you know, professional leagues trying to start to ramp up, they're popping positive all over the place. And, you know, you guys are world-class athletes. You'll probably sail through it. But, you know, you don't want to pop right before and then not be able to play, right? Let's talk about some of that.
So, because this whole thing happened, all the gyms are closed, so I had to get a nice – I had to buy a bunch of, like, racks and stuff in my house, do a bunch of workouts at home. I'm a big jump roper now. That's I do a lot of my cardio. I do a bunch of sprints here and there, but I'm a big jump rope guy to do my cardio now because the jiu-jitsu place is closed. But leading up to the championship series, we're really going to have to quarantine. I'm going to have to start quarantine in the next couple of days, not talking to anyone, not seeing anyone, and really not leaving my house, because if I test positive, I'm not going to be able to travel.
Right. And
are you? I definitely want to play.
Have you thought about like testing early just to say, you know, maybe I'll get on some meds or something. Maybe I'll take a steroid or something. You know what I mean? Or I don't even know if you can do that, but I think steroids are good for this, apparently. Have you thought about taking some tests before just to make sure you're clean? You know what I mean? You're straight?
I didn't think of that, but I might, honestly, because we have to take a test, I think, 3 days before we leave, and that'll determine if we're allowed to come or not, because it takes about 24 hours, I think they said.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. Because we have to do, like, the spit one, not the one up our nose.
Yeah.
Do a spit one and, like, swab in our mouth.
Yeah.
That's the test we have to do. So I think I'm going to do a test before. Good idea. Thank you.
Yeah.
Eric's the COVID king.
Yeah, the COVID king. I mean, study this. No, but we had Rabel on, and I was like, dude, you can't just like wait right before and then Paul Rabel tests positive, not even, you know, asymptomatic, not even know it. That's a disaster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you got to get all this and find out if you actually do test positive, tell him, give me whatever you got so I can get this out of my system. Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
have they been, I mean, like, I know you, I'm sure you guys have phone calls, Zoom calls, whatever, you know, as you guys prep for this. So like, walk us through that right now. I was like, how, cause you're only going to have what, you know, a week of training camps, and then, you know, then you get into your pool play. And I know you're maybe not in the, maybe you are, I don't know, maybe you are the 6v6 meetings and what kind of offense and defense you're going to run, or maybe you're just more working on your craft, but just tell us a little bit about how your team is kind of preparing for what's next here at the end of the month.
So my team has been having a bunch of meetings. I literally just got off a meeting, and then I hopped right on this. We've been having a meeting at least once or twice a week, talking about stuff. I'm in the defensive spot just in case I lose a face-off. I pay attention to it, but I plan on winning the face-off instead of losing. So that's what I really talk about there.
Right. So walk us through what happens if you get stuck on D. Are you locking a guy off? Are they running the zone? What are you doing?
I'm locking that guy off and trying to get the hell off that field.
Yeah. I can't imagine trying to lock any of those guys off. I got to imagine.
Oh, they're so fast. But if I get stuck, I'll play a little defense. I'll try to bench press some guy into the ground.
Yeah. Can you talk about it?
Go ahead, Eric.
Well, I was going to say, can you talk about it for a neophyte like me? Like sort of the strategy of getting off, right? Because there is a little strategy into that, right? It seems like I see a little gamesmanship when you guys are doing that. How do you learn that, and what's kind of the key?
So being a face-off guy, you usually just get off right away. But if I'm on offense, I win the ball, I pass it to my attackman.
Right.
Sometimes you want to have odd numbers. So sometimes I'll pretend to run off, have the other guy sprint right to the box right away, and I'll come right back. So we have odd numbers, and we have a little fast break goal. Not fast break goal, odd number goal.
Right.
So we'll have six guys, and they'll have five. And one guy will always be open because the other guy ran right to the box. And
does that work, though, at the PLL level? Does that work?
Barely. It barely works because these guys are smart. Yeah. They're on you like white on rice.
Yeah.
But sometimes it works.
Right.
At the college level, I mean, it works a ton in the sense of like trying to implement that into your game plan.
Right.
If you know a guy is really uncomfortable on one side of the ball, I mean, at the college level, they just play 5-on-5. Sometimes they'll just, they won't even sub off. They'll just stand on the side of the field.
Yep.
And sometimes it looks stupid to someone that doesn't know what's going on. But is that part of your game you want to evolve, like the offensive side? I mean, I know, like, look, you know, the PLL guys are not going to ask their face-off guys to go play man up. But, like, obviously, you know, I don't know what your stats were from a goal standpoint, but you need to be able to shoot the ball on the run and be a threat, you know, at the face-off once you get it in your stick. So talk about that part of the game and maybe where you want to go with it.
So I had 2 goals last year. Last year I was more a little nervous. I was just used to get the ball to my attack, but I've definitely been working on my stick skills this year. So I could pass, maybe stay on a little bit, let it pass it around a little bit until they yell at me like, "Foul! Get off the field! Get off!" But I'm definitely gonna try to stay on as long as I can this time.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I was watching a couple clips and I thought, like, as a coach, I saw like the old, like, you know, like turtle, 3 guys chasing you, so you're just gonna flip it over your head, knowing that someone's running onto it. And I know it works. I was like, all right, I've seen that.
I talk to all my wing guys. I tell them, if I have the ball, just be ready. I'll find you somewhere. And this, like you said, I throw right over my head. I'll throw between my legs. One handed. I'll do whatever I can to get you the ball.
Now, can you play in the NLL too? Is that something that's interesting to you? I don't even know. Do they have just like guys that are strictly like Fogos like in the NLL, or no? You have to be more 2-way. How does that work?
I can play in the NLL. I got drafted by the Riptide, the Long Island team.
Yeah.
But we had difficulties meeting during the contract. So I joined late in the season because we finally agreed to something. And this whole thing happened. I was there for one practice and this happened. But they are evolving more face-off guys that just come on and come off.
Right.
But most of them usually are defensemen because you're playing in a hockey arena.
Right.
It's so small. There's not really much time for you to take a face-off and run right off. So you always have to play a little bit field. So it's definitely a different game.
I feel like you could play some D, no? I mean, like, being a linebacker is 6'3", 230. That's like a typical NLL size defenseman. Those are just
– Exactly, yeah.
You'd be a beast out there.
Yeah, drop some gloves, pull the jersey over the helmet, throw some uppercuts.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's Connor Farrell 2.0. That's the next – that's I next like year's it. Podcast.
Exactly.
Connor, talk about the new NCAA rules changes. What do you make of it? I'll just go through them quickly for people that may not be aware. Faceoff specialist must be in a standing position now. Putting one knee down will not be allowed. Sticks must be held in a neutral grip as opposed to the motorcycle grip. And they say, I don't know how, did they tighten this up more than what I'm reading, Dane? It says an increased focus will be placed on disallowing clamping for an extended period. How are they going to monitor that? That sounds very vague.
It's the whole get it out call that refs have been saying for the past couple of years. They're just saying that they want it to get out even quicker, you know, and they're gonna call you even quicker if your elbow's pinning the stick down, anything like that. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Connor, but they don't want to see a spinning 50-50.
I like that though. I like watching a war personally.
Yeah, people go crazy for those.
Yeah, I love it.
Go crazy.
So when you hear about these, what do you think? How does it affect the game? Are you happy about it? Sad about it? What's your take on it?
So I have my own face-off training company up here on the island that I train over 80 kids weekly.
Wow.
And so they were definitely freaking out about it a little bit. But I was a standing neutral grip guy. I stood up most of my career, except for the past 3 years. Then I switched down. But all my guys know the standing neutral grip. So just so I put it in the back of the head, just in case they needed it, in case they're losing on the knee, they switch to that. But I hear a lot of people complaining about these rules. They don't like it. Me, personally, I think there's going to be more tie-ups than usual because you're not going to be able to turn your wrist like how you would when you're in motorcycle grip. It's definitely going to be a little difficult until you learn the correct way how to do it. Some coaches might not know how to do it as well as others do. Like, even will teach their guys. But I think that it will hopefully get turned back to you being able to be on a knee or standing up. But if it stays the way it is, you have to stand up. I think we shouldn't complain. I think we should just go right back out to working, and that's how you become better.
What is the latest on that? Because obviously, I mean, it is passed, but it's not officially passed, right? Because I'm hearing the same, probably the same thing that you are, that like there's been a lot of pushback, whether it's from coaches or maybe it's face-off specialists like you, like, wait a second, like, we don't need to do this. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
What are you hearing? And like, when does that when do we know? Because even our, I was at, you know, we had a workout tonight and we have a face-off guy that's going on to play at a really high level D3 school. And he's like, coach, have you heard anything about summer tournaments? Like, are we going to be on a knee? Are we going to be standing? You know, like as a recruit, like you need to know that. Like, or should I go into this tournament? Like, obviously you need to put yourself in the best position to win. So if they're going to allow you to take a knee, every guy's going to take a knee. But like, yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard much. So maybe you know more than I do.
So one of my guys is at a tournament right now, and he was told that he could go on his knee, but he's younger. He's a class 22 guy. But
yeah,
from what I've heard recently is that they're waiting. If there's a fall ball, that's where they want to test these rules out. And then there's going to be a decision after that because they want to see how they don't want to just throw a rule out because these guys never faced off before who made the rule. They're not just going to throw it out there and it's right into the rule book right away. So they're testing it out. But if there's no rule, if there's no fall ball, the rule is going to stay the same how it was last year. So you're going to be able to go on your knee.
Gotcha.
Whenever the next fall ball is, they're going to test it out, and that's when you make your decision.
And that's what they did with the shot clock, right? They kind of practiced with it in the fall, and they tweaked it a little more, and then they implemented it, right?
And I mean, and it was a couple years of testing the shot clock, 60 second, 30 second, you know, put it on. Like, it wasn't just, and they made significant rules with the, you know, face offs. It's just this one is so dramatic, but it kind of puts guys in purgatory. I don't know, as a coach, like you want to like put kids in the best position to get recruited. And if you start focusing all your time on neutral grip and then it doesn't turn into that, it's like, well, you know, so what do you do as a coach? Like what do, I mean, I'm a high school coach. I don't know what the hell to tell our face off guy as far as what he should be practicing more.
So what I do with most of my guys is I tell them right now, because the rules look like they're probably going to get changed, is do 80-20. So 80% stand up, 20% on your knee, just so you don't lose that little muscle memory of being on your knee. But what was I just going to say?
Well, that's what I'm going to follow then. I'm going to follow the 80-20 rule then. So, I mean, it makes sense.
What is the biggest difference between being on your knee and standing up? What's the biggest difference?
It's all preference, honestly. Some guys are unbelievable at standing up, and some guys are – it's just how you feel comfortable.
Uh-huh.
Like I'm comfortable doing both of these. I was a stand-up guy for over 10 years, and I've been on my knee guy for the past 3. So I'm comfortable doing both. I think it's a good thing to have in your back pocket. If it goes back to being on your knee, if you know how to stand up and face off, it's a good thing because you get up right away, especially if you're losing clamp. You get their counters right away. So if you could get your guys to learn how to stand up, it'll be a good asset to your game.
Now
go ahead, Eric.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say my initial thought as a coach is like that plays the body type. You know what I mean? That was my initial gut. Like, was just like, you know, the rules, you know, I see the knee as being, you know, a strength for a certain type of body type, you know, a guy that's a little bit more of a bruiser that can eat and can still be really light in his hands. But a guy like our face-off guy or any is tall, a little bit more, I don't know if you want to use the word athletic. I don't want to hurt your feelings or anyone else's feelings, but
just a slimmer build, not necessarily that stocky.
You know what I mean? Because there is a little bit more of a you can swipe a little bit quicker out of the neutral. That kind of. Mm-hmm. So, would you agree with that, or what would you say to that statement? You can call me an idiot. I don't really care.
Well, I think it's just what your guy could get comfortable with. Like some of my guys are in their own head right now, saying, "I hate this way. I want to get changed back." But then we start going over. I tell them, "Rome wasn't built in a day. You got to really practice and work at it, and that's how you get comfortable with what you do."
But does this?
Like, they're trying to get rid of the best guys being at the top, like the TD Erlins and all those. But those guys are there for a reason. They worked their butt off to get there. I think these guys are just going to excel even more at the guys who are at the top.
Yeah, why? So I don't understand that. Why would this hurt a guy like TD? Why would that hurt him? Why does it bring the rest of the field up closer to him in their eyes?
I think he's going to excel even more because he's a guy that the workhorse, and he's not going to nonstop train this. And some guys might not be as good as it, but they're not going to work as hard as him. So I think he's going to go from like a 70% guy to maybe an 80-85% guy.
Does he win mostly on like clamp and just having the quickest hands? Because he's a smaller guy, right? He's not some like ox like you. He's not like that.
Yeah. So he wins most of his. I watched a lot of his film. He wins most of his on those rotations. He's able to drive people off the ball. Because he gets around so quick, your stick's bent the wrong way, so he's able to get the ball right in his stick right away. But he's very fast with his hands. He's very good.
Can you tell when you see a young kid, I don't know, 7th grade, 8th grade, you could tell right away that kid can do this? or is it a skill that you really have to learn for a while and then you can tell? Like, how quickly can you look at a kid and go, you know what, that guy's going to be good?
You could give me like a week and a half training as a kid. You could tell if he's going to be good or not. You could tell if he's into it. Like, I have a couple of guys where I could tell they're going to be absolute studs when they're older.
Really?
He's just into it. He wants to nonstop working.
Yeah, but can you tell like right away, like, that kid's hands, I mean, he's gifted. I mean, he could just boom.
Yeah.
You can
see. Oh, yeah. You have a little twitch. It's like, if you have the twitch where you're able to react to the whistle fast, then you can definitely get it.
Right. That's amazing.
And then there's the mindset.
It's hard to teach that twitch.
Yeah. You can't, I would think.
But you got to have a mindset too, right? I mean, it's like faceoffs and goalies, like every, you know, playing on Long Island, I'm sure you've met plenty of different characters playing the sport of lacrosse. Like, goalies are always a little bit off, right? And faceoff guys typically are always a little bit. I mean, you're like the nicest, most normal faceoff guy I've ever met. But,
I'm a football guy. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that makes sense. But there's the mental side of it too. So someone could watch a kid and say, oh, that kid has sick hands, but then realize, you know, he can't really cut it, you know, mentally. So that's the other piece of it, Eric. That's like,
right.
You know, you got to be a fighter. That's how I tell my kids. It's like a boxing match. You know what I mean? Like, every time you go out there, it's like a different round.
Would you,
from a guy that doesn't really face off, but
would you recommend that like kids like kind of focus and lock in on being a face-off specialist early on? Or would you recommend learning the whole, like, I don't know if I would want, let's say I had a young kid who loved facing off. My kid started, the only way he got on the field early on, he now plays at Marist, but the way he got, you know, on the field early on with his club team was facing off. You know, he wasn't good enough at attack yet, wasn't good enough in midfield. But I went to the coach and go, I don't want him to only face off. You know, I'm a dad. I'm getting all involved. you know? But also, I don't know that I would want my kid in seventh grade just getting the hell beat out of him, too. You know? I don't know. When's an appropriate time to really focus on that skill?
So as young as they are, I say face off and you can stay on the field. You want to learn everything, even play defense a little bit.
Right.
But the only time I became a face-off guy, like actual FOGO face-off get-off, was my senior year of high school. So I was playing the field the entire time. I still recommend everyone play the field,
right,
especially playing different sports too. If you play as many sports as you can. Like, I was a three-sport athlete in high school.
Right.
That's what I recommend that everyone doing.
Right. That makes sense. Well, listen, man, it's been a pleasure having you on. Dane, did we leave anything out?
No, I'm ready to see you tear it up and see those jiu-jitsu moves and the end of July here.
It's going to be amazing. Let's pump your social media. What's your Instagram? What's your Twitter?
My Instagram's Connor Farrell 25.
Okay.
And my Twitter is Connor Farrell 41.
Perfect. And are you active on that? Is that something that you enjoy doing?
Yeah. The Instagram, the PLL really blew my Instagram. I went from like 1,000 followers in college to now I'm at like 16,000 in a year.
That's pretty good
for
being a dude.
16,002 followers now.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Well, listen, man, go in there, get that corona test, knock that out, make sure you're straight. And then, you know, hide from everybody, maybe get your girlfriend quarantined with her or something. And then that's it. Because we got to see you, man.
Hell yeah, you will. Don't worry.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. That's Connor Farrell, everybody. That's Dane Smith. I'm EB Junkies, and we'll be back next week. Thank you.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.